the spring that turned from green to that harvest honey. Hold one up for the banker downtown that got him on his feet with handshake money. Here's to the farmer's wife that loves him every night, raising a son, raising a daughter. They gather around the table, send it up to the father. Somehow they get closer when times get harder. Here's to the farmer.
With Urban Farm, Greg Peterson. We were going to come back with something. What was that? We talked about so many other things during the break.
He's just saying, here's to the farmer. I love that. I love that. That's, you know, that's one of the things I've been working on for decades here in town, is to make more farmers, because we really need to consider where our food's coming from and grow a lot more local. And so that's really my mission these days. Well, for the past 20 years has been to create, you know, inspire people to grow their own food. Even if you're just growing your own food on a porch or a balcony or, you know, in a small backyard, grow something. And I tell people this all the time, grow herbs. They're the most expensive thing to buy and the easiest dang thing to grow. They are so simple to grow, most herbs.
We have a rosemary plant that just...
Unending, right?
Oh, I can't kill the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's you need a successful plant. Every gardener needs one that's just, you know, mints, one that will keep coming back.
You gotta
be careful because it'll take over.
Exactly.
But rosemary too. We have it in a whiskey barrel.
Yep. Rosemary,
a pot.
Oregano, basil, cilantro. Those come back year after year. Parsley is another thing that reseeds itself year after year. And the rosemary, oregano.
Basil, oregano.
Yeah, those are two things that just they've grown for decades at my house. They, you know, they're perennials. So what we were talking about was starting seeds.
Yes.
We were starting seeds.
Starting indoor seeds.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a challenge to, you know, start your seeds indoors. You know, it's ideal to have a little greenhouse. And I'm not talking about one you can walk into. I'm talking about one that sits on your countertop. So you start the seeds in the greenhouse so that it stays nice and humid in there. So that's for the seed starting part. And then once you have a plant that's started up, then it's, you know, a sunny windowsill is going to, you know, get you going. But it takes experimenting. I tell people all the time that growing food in the desert's one great big grand experiment. You just need to you need to keep trying. The other thing I tell people is I've killed more plants than you have, I promise. Been growing food here in the desert since 1974. I know, I started when I was 2. I started when I was 14, actually. And, you know, that happens. You know, you're going to plant something and it's not going to work. Oh, well, take a deep breath. Try it. Don't do that again. Do something else. Try something else. And you know, look to people that have been doing it for a long time. I've got a lot of data at urbanfarm.org that people can learn from. Plus, we have online classes. We've got Elaine Ingham, who is an international soil scientist, for a webinar here in about 2 weeks. So, you know, watch our channel for all kinds of classes and that kind of stuff. But go to classes. There's people teaching classes at farmers markets and just learn. You have to experiment, jump, and don't be afraid.
Because you are.
Yeah, well,
a lot, like you said, you've mowed more plants than
right,
anyone else.
Right.
And you weren't trying to.
No, I'm trying to keep them alive. Trying to keep them alive. You know, one of my questions in my podcast is, you know, tell us about a time you failed and what you learned from that. And I purposefully ask that of people because I want to know what their realization is from having done something that some people might consider a failure and how they got through it. You know, how they moved forward out of it and continued growing food. So
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to talk to Mr. Greg Peterson, the urban farmer, starting with Peter, who wants to know about oranges. Welcome to the broadcast, Peter.
Thank you. And what I'm dealing with is a citrus tree that is an orange citrus tree that attracts roof rats. And I'd like to know if I can pick the oranges early to get them off the tree and limit the amount of rat problem I have. Will those oranges ripen, or is that not a good thing?
No, not so much. I usually like to let them at least get completely turned color on the tree. My question for you is, though, have you actually seen roof rat damage? And are you sure it's roof rat damage and not bird damage? Because they look very
similar.
In the
past 5 years, I've probably killed 30 roof rats with an electric rat zapper.
Oh, how's that work? Because I just ordered some of those today. Because we've got a rat problem near the urban farm.
They'll work.
So, all right.
They'll work.
dog nuggets. You don't have to mess with peanut butter or anything. Just dry dog food will attract.
Cool. Cool. You know, that's a really good point about the roof rats and the pack rats. Once we start growing things in our yard, and this is not a reason to not grow food. You should absolutely grow food in your yard, and then, you know, we just have to deal with challenges when they show up. Birds are going to show up. You might have rats show up.
Rabbits.
Rabbits. We had, okay.
Insects.
So I lived near 16th Street and Bethany Home at the urban farm. And the other night, Heidi comes into me. She said, "Oh my gosh, Greg, look what's on the back patio." A big fat raccoon was on the back patio. I was like, whoa, right in the middle of Phoenix. So,
yeah, my uncle on Mummy Mountain has squared off with a raccoon a couple times in his backyard.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I've actually talked because we had a bobcat kill near 16th Street in Bethany Home. We had a bobcat kill of some of our chickens about a year and a half ago. So I called the Arizona Game and Fish Department and talked to the urban wildlife guy. And he says, "Greg, there's really nothing we can do about urban wildlife. They're here. And with the way they've been managed over the past 20 years, they seem to be growing in numbers. So, you know, we're going to have pack rats. We're going to have raccoons. We're going to have bobcats. We're going to have coyotes. We're going to have pet dogs.
Javelina.
that mess with our stuff. We're going to have javelina. We just, as urban farmers, we have to get to know how we can manage for that.
You know, there's javelina all the way up to Flagstaff now.
Wow.
They've started seeing cases where they've made it all the way up to Flagstaff. That is a very adaptive creature.
Oh, yeah.
So this is, you have to be careful about what you say.
yes? You just do a blank. We'll come back to it. How's that sound?
An appreciation for archery.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and having...
When we're talking gardening and old world skills, archery is another one we've should consider.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I had that thought with a raccoon on our back patio. Raccoons are mean.
They are.
They're really, you know, they're mean creatures. They will take out they'll take out your pet. They will take out your chickens. So, yeah, it's...
Oh, they're not afraid to come after you either if you're a threat.
Yeah.
They're a fighting animal.
The second I walked out on the patio with a pitchfork, he split. So
pitchfork. Yeah. There's another old world.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you got a picture from a gentleman on citrus tree.
Yes, it was that had read the question and we asked them to send a picture because they said they have a off-white, dried, pasty, cement-looking stuff at the base of their citrus tree. And they wanted to know our thoughts. And they sent in this picture that exactly described.
Exactly.
And for the viewer, we'll have this posted on our website, but this is a citrus is surrounded by, you know, a granite base.
Right. Yeah. So there's a couple things going on here. Let me take a look at the picture. First of all, that's fungi. Mushroom of a sorts, and doing is it's breaking down organic matter. So having fungus or fungi in your yard is not a bad thing. Fungi is actually doing work, and it's a sign of healthy soil. Now, this particular kind of fungi, I've seen it around the base of trees before, just like that. And what it's doing is it's feeding on the old wood. So is it a great thing to have around a living fruit tree? Probably not. But the other thing I notice about that picture is that there's gravel around the base of the tree.
Which I remember.
It
was one of your ways to kill.
Kill a fruit tree. That's right. I give a webinar at urbanfarm.org, 3 ways to kill your fruit trees. And I know there's another one coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
And one of those ways is to put it in a granite surrounding.
Exactly. So what I would do with this picture As I would, oh, you put it away. That's fine.
There you go.
I got it tattooed on my brain. What I would do with that is I would rake away the gravel to the drip line. The drip line is if you stood directly over the tree and looked straight down on it, it's where the shadow would land. It's the part you wouldn't see. So out to the edges of the leaves. I would rake back that gravel to the edge of the drip line, and I would put a 6 to 8 inch thick layer of woody mulch. That is really the solution here, especially here in the lower desert for trees and fruit trees, trees of all kinds. I think we have a shade tree question too. But that's going to have your trees be a lot more successful, because that white fungusy stuff that you're seeing is a function of the tree not doing great. And what you want to do is you want your trees to thrive, and you do that by putting a nice layer of organic mulch all the way around it. Because here's what happens real quickly woody mulch. It creates this insulation layer. It acts like a sponge. It holds the water in. And at the interface between the dirt and the woody mulch, it starts making this absolutely amazing soil that the trees will thrive in down the road.
We appreciate the text. And yes, the other, and sending in that picture as a follow-up for a little visual aid. It's a lot of the times, pictures say 1,000 words, so that can really help in diagnosing the situation.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that. But another individual, hey, I've heard Greg talk about planting fruit trees. Mm-hmm. What about shade trees? You're a big proponent of planting something that you're going to eat. But I've also been to the urban farm and know there's a big pine tree in there as well.
Well, it's an ash tree. Not a pine tree. Yeah, although a pine tree would be nice. I wouldn't mind the pine needles as well. Here's what I tell people about what I do at the urban farm. I plant things that are edible or they support edibles. Supporting edibles means that they are pollinators, they provide shade, they provide mulch. So basically all the trees on my yard, actually all the plants in my yard are workers. They're doing something. They're adding something to the space. And you absolutely, especially on the northwest corner of your house, of your property, you want to get shade in. Plant shade. Ash trees do really well here. You know, people plant pine trees. It wouldn't be my first choice. There's all of the desert ironwoods. There's Palo Verdes. There's mesquites, all of which, by the way, are edible. Mm-hmm. They put off an edible pod that you can eat. And mesquite flour. Heidi and I actually use mesquite flour in cooking a lot. It's wonderful. In fact, if we're using mesquite flour, we don't have to use sugar because it's so sweet.
And when you do that, are you grinding your own, or is there a place you can go buy ground up mesquite pods?
Both.
Okay.
Both. I found that Azure Standard has a nice mesquite flour. Comes from South America, though, so I'm really wanting to
stay local, like you said.
Stay local and pick our own. So, down in Tucson, they have a mesquite bean mill.
Mm-hmm.
And so every year or so, I'll collect mesquite beans in May and June and then go down there for the milling and actually have my beans milled.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Enough. And what you need, if that's not enough for the full year, you got a substitute
then,
resource.
Yeah, you got a substitute. So, what would be really cool is to get our own mill up here, and that we're just lacking some infrastructure that we're working on. If anybody's interested in talking about doing a mill up here, shoot me an email and we can figure it out, because it's a community asset that we desperately need.